Thanks, Simon. My name's Tracy, I'm an addict.
Hi, Tracy.
And I'm a bit nervous. I was never in a million years expected there to be so many people here. I thought it would be about five or something. So that was kind of what I had in mind. I've known about doing this chair for a little while and kind of thought what I'd talk about is how I got here, obviously, what I did when I got here and what I do today, you know, and I'm going to try and keep it as simple as I possibly can, you know. And I was sitting here thinking that, you know, when I was a kid, I used to sit in my bedroom and think that I'd been swapped at birth, that I'd been put in the wrong family, you know, and that one day someone was going to knock on the door and say, we've made a mistake, we're your mum and dad, and we're going to take you away. And that's not because there was anything wrong with my childhood, I just didn't feel like I belonged in that particular family. You know, it was never enough, whatever my mum did. You know, my dad left when I was little. My mum brought up four of us on her own, but it was never enough. You know, I didn't have the nice clothes, or, you know, we wasn't allowed to have friends round and all that sort of stuff. And I always felt like I should be somewhere else. I never really knew where that was. And when I picked up alcohol, I was only 12, and I remember I was hanging around with some people that were quite a bit older than me, and when I had my first drink, I kind of found what I was looking for, because looking back in hindsight now, I can kind of see that I didn't really care what went on. I didn't care where I was. These people that were older than me, you know, they kind of accepted me for just, you know, even though I was 12, it was like, you know, like, she's all right because she can have a beer. You know, a bit strange. And if my mum said to me, come in at 9, I'd come home 2 weeks later, you know. If she said, go to bed, I'd leave the house, you know. And I've got a son today who's 13, and if he even dared do any of that, you know, I can't believe that I was the way that I was now, looking back, you know. And in the end, my mum had enough, and she put her hands up and said, I can't cope with her. And I was put into care. And it was like, you know, my dream had suddenly become a reality. I was going to get these new parents, you know, and I was going to be all right. And it didn't work like that, you know. I was stuck in a children's home where there was no kind of, if there was any rules, I didn't abide by them. Same again, if they said come in, I'd stay out. You know, if they said go to bed, I'd leave. You know, if they said go to school, I wouldn't. And I wouldn't do anything that I was told. You know, because why should I? You know, I really thought that I was kind of in control of my life. And I experimented with all kinds of different things, you know, as I was growing up as a teenager. And kind of looking back now, I mean, I used to sit around my mate's house with a can of butane, thinking I had it made. Do you know what I mean? Dribbling, you know, hearing all these lights and all this stuff going on, just really thinking, you know, I've made it. You know, this is kind of what life's like. You know, it's fantastic. And when you couldn't get any butane, it ended up being suede cleaner and sometimes air spray and deodorant. You know what I mean? Just depending on what I could get my hands on at the time. And I finally got given a set of foster carers who, that, you know, they were great. And they had to put up with me, you know. And I still couldn't do as I was told. You know, and I did try, you know, and I went to school for a couple of years and I managed to do all right, but I'd go out at weekends and, you know, and I'd be the sort of girl going down to the youth club and drinking two bottles of dry martini before I even got there, and, you know, and then really making a show of myself and then waking up in the morning wishing that I'd never gone in the first place, and then drinking a bit more just to kind of take the embarrassment away, if you like. And in the end, my foster parents put their hands up as well and said, we can't cope with her. So off I went. And then I got my own little place and I thought, I'll be all right now. So, I mean, no one can tell me what to do. You know, I can do what I like. And I fell apart instantly because I didn't know what to do. You know, and my drinking got really out of hand. I had a job. I worked in Islington and I worked for the print. And it's quite, they drink a lot. People who work in the print, you know, drink a lot. And they used to go to the pub at lunchtime. And I couldn't understand how they could go, have a couple of beers, and go back to work, and work for the rest of the day. And And I'd still be there at 6 o'clock, you know, in the morning, the next morning after lunch. And I got the sack, you know, I lost my job. And then I moved away and then I got another job and I lost that through drinking, because I'd go out and I'd have a drink and I couldn't stop, you know. I'd just drink and drink and drink. And I used to say, you know, to my mates, I can drink you under the table. And the only person that would be left under the table would be me. Do you know what I mean? And it was, you know, I kind of, for me, you know, my using progressed, but I think the really kind of really embarrassing kind of step four stuff that you're never going to know about is my drinking. You know, it's really, really awful. And again, you know, I kind of just drifted around, and I went put round to see a friend of mine when I'd moved back up to London, and you know, I knew some great people. You know, my friends were heroin users, but they were really cool because they didn't really have any worries in life. You know, they just used to disappear in the bedroom and everything was nice, and they used to let me go up there and I could do what I liked. There was no rules, you know, which, and I met this bloke around there, and I was only 19, and he said, oh, my name's so-and-so, and I've just come out of detox, and I'm clean. And I didn't know what he meant, and I said, well, do you want to move in with me? You know, and it really was that kind of simple. You know, I knew him for a day, you know. And because what I kind of, you know, I just wanted someone to take care of me, you know, and why I asked a heroin addict, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? But at the time, I thought that, you know, he'd look after me. And I realised really quickly that this bloke weren't clean, you know, and he also weren't going to stop either. But I'd found my purpose in life, and that was to get this bloke off drugs, and that's what I was going to do, you know. And I was determined that I was going to do that. And I sat with him while he clucked, and I went and got his gear, and I did this, that, and the other, and he weren't stopping. So we had a plan, and I was still drinking, and I kind of done a bit of a swap, you know. I was a pub drinker, and he made a suggestion and said, you know, tenant soup is much cheaper, you know, and also you get more of a buzz. So, you know, I was like, I just started drinking it, you know. So I became an indoors tenant super drinker who, you know, but I had morals, because, you know, I wouldn't drink it if it was warm. It had to be cold. So, you know, I did have some morals, you know, but and I never really thought that I had a problem. You know, I really didn't think I had a problem, because he was the one with the problem, not me. So we decided that he would get clean if I had a baby. You know, this is what was going to happen. I get pregnant, I have a baby, he'll stop using. I got pregnant, he carried on using. I was in Wolf giving birth. He's turned up after being out scoring all day. He had to go in and have a hit before I gave birth, and then it was just a complete and utter mess. 6 weeks after my son was born, I got pregnant again, which wasn't very sensible, let me tell you. And I sat there and I just thought, I don't even know what I thought, I just thought, my life's in a bit of a mess, you know, and I didn't really know what to do. But I realised one thing, is drugs had something that I didn't have. So what did I do? I thought I'd give it a go and find out what it was that drugs had that I didn't have, you know. And I ain't proud of, you know, the rest of my using. It's not something that I'm proud about, but I have a lot of acceptance today about why I did the stuff that I did. You know, it's not because I'm evil, it's because I was addicted. You know, I suffer from a disease that takes no, you know, that has no morals, doesn't care what it does to people, you know. And I was pregnant with my son when I started using, but I weren't as bad as everybody else, because, you know, my partner was an injecting addict, you know, I only smoked it, you know, which meant I weren't a junkie, because you couldn't be a junkie unless you injected, you know. And I didn't use every day to start with, but what I realised very, very quickly is why he took drugs, because the minute I picked up heroin, I put down alcohol, and I didn't drink for a hell of a long time after that, because I found what I'd been looking for, you know. I had no responsibility. I had responsibilities, but I didn't have to take responsibility, if you like. The only thing I was responsible for was getting my drugs, you know. And I gave birth to my son. You know, my son wasn't very well when he was born, but No, I remember being in hospital and there was another mum in there whose baby was really withdrawing, more so than mine. And I remember sitting there thinking, you're bang out of order. Do you know what I mean? But really believing it as well, kind of setting myself up on some moral high ground, thinking that I weren't as bad as them, you know? And that kind of kept me out there for a long time, you know, that I weren't the worst one, you know? And I wouldn't leave my kids at home on their own. They came out feeding with me. You know, that was my way of justifying being a good mum, you know, that they weren't left alone on their own. And after my second son was born, you know, obviously what happens is social services get involved and, you know, and they wanted me to stop using, so I'd tell them I'd stopped and then they'd know I wasn't and then I'd tell them I'd stopped and, you know, and it was just that all the time. And I remember them coming round once and the house was a complete tip and I said, you've just caught me on a bad day. You know, it's not normally like this. If you come back tomorrow, it'll be all right. You know, they came back tomorrow and it was worse than the day before, you know, but I always thought I was one step ahead of everyone else. And I went into detox. I remember going into detox. My youngest son was fostered and my elder one went to stay with my mum. And I think I was only, must have been about 23, 22. I was 22 when I went into detox. And I didn't even know why I was going in there. I thought it was some kind of holiday resort, you know, that you went in. And everybody I see looked really well. And I thought, wow, this is what happens, you know. You stop using, you know, or you do whatever and you look quite well. But no one I'd seen afterwards ever managed to stay clean, you know. And the same with people went to prison. They'd come out, you know, really big, you know, because they'd had loads of food. And then they'd come out and within 2 weeks they'd be really skinny again, you know. And I remember going into this detox and I got down to 5 mils of methadone and jumped out the window and run across the fields to get away. I realised I could have actually have opened the door and walked out, but it's a bit more dramatic, isn't it, when you have to jump out the window. When I left, I'd realised I'd made a mistake, so I rung them back up and they took me back in and I did the same thing again, 5 mil dash, do you know what I mean? 5 mils of methadone and dash out the door. And my using, you know, it was just, I could never sit here and say that my using was glamorous. It was scuzzy, dirty and horrible, you know, it really was. And I didn't care. I thought I was the only one who suffered as a consequence of my using, and I really, really did, you know. And today I know that I probably suffered the least as a consequence of my using. And I'm not sure how this happened, but I got pregnant again, you know, and I don't even remember how that happened, but apparently it did, because I'm not the Virgin Mary, obviously. But I got pregnant for a third time, and it was... It still didn't kind of sink in, really, what I was doing, you know. And I suppose I still had this thing that I wasn't as bad as everybody else, you know. And, you know, my using has kind of really got out of control. I was injecting, I was smoking crack. I weren't a doctor, so I made a mess of myself. You know, I had no veins, but I still thought I did. Just a complete and utter mess. And me and my ex-husband, we decided, notice I say husband, because we tried to get married. Well, we actually did get married. And I really feel for my mum, you know, when I sort of talk about this. I'm the only person in my family that's got married, and my mum had the privilege of watching me marry my ex-husband. And what she got was an eight-month pregnant woman with two boys, and me a smackhead, my husband a smackhead, standing there watching me say my vows to this bloke. How proud she must have been, do you know what I mean? And I've really sort of thought about that lately, you know. She must have been so proud, not... You know, and at the time, you know, I thought it was great. You know, I got the bus to the registry office, the bus back, you know, fucking gatching out all night. That was my wedding, you know, that was my amazing wedding. Great. Anyway, cut a long story short, you know, I gave birth to my daughter, and by the grace of God, I was very lucky with her. She had no withdrawal symptoms. Not because of anything I did. And it really wasn't because of anything I did. You know, I think she was kind of being looked after. You know, I really do. And by this time, social services were saying, right, that's it now. You know, there's three kids. And for me, you know, three kids, a drug habit, and a husband with a drug habit, you know, it was complete and utter chaos. And they decided that we had to go to treatment. We had to go to rehab. But not only did we have to go to rehab, we had to go together as a family, you know. So there was me and my husband and my three kids. We all went off to rehab up in Sheffield. What an experience that was. So, man, it really was an experience. I detoxed up there with my kids. Took them to school every day, clucking, you know, and really thought to myself, I've made it. Do you know what I mean? I can do all this stuff. I can look after my kids. I can cluck. I can take them to school. I can come back. I became the top resident, top mum. Do you know what I mean? Top everything. Didn't know how to stay clean, I have to say. But I was brilliant at everything that went on in the rehab. And the day I left, I managed to get early discharge for being so good, you know, from this rehab. And the day I left, I knew nothing about NA. I knew nothing about anything, you know. All I knew was that I hadn't used for a little bit of time whilst I was in this rehab. And, you know, my sons had got a little bit of stability back in their lives. My daughter was still only a baby, so she didn't really know what was going on. And social services had got me this house back in London, gave me £3,000 community care grant, dropped me off and said, there you go, make a go of it. So I looked at him, he looked at me, I said, go and get a bag of chips. He came back with a bag of gear. But we was only going to use the once, because I'd learnt in rehab that if you don't use for 3 days on the trot, you can't get a habit. And I was convinced, because I'd done so much work in rehab, I knew that was what you know, you just don't use 3 days on the trot. So I used the first day, it was fine. You know, nothing better than a £10 bag after you've been in rehab. It's great. Do you know what I mean? Really stoned. And I used that. Then the next day, it was, remember, they said 3 days. On day three, they said three, but they meant four. You know. 2 weeks later, I was completely on my arse. Now, you know, that's my real only experience of a relapse. Okay, since I've come into NA, touch wood, I haven't used since. And this relapse lasted 4 months, and it was the worst 4 months of my using. If I thought for 1 minute I was bad before I went to rehab, it was nothing compared to this. You know, I had three kids, you know, my two sons, you know, I'd promised them in rehab that it was over, I was never going to use again. And I remember them just sitting there looking at me, you know, and I would just use more on the guilt because I couldn't cope with, just couldn't cope with it, you know, so I just used more. And my example of powerlessness, you know, this 4 months that I relapsed, I'd had enough, and I really knew I'd had enough, you know, and I used to sit there going, I'm not going to use, I'm not going to use, I'm not going to use, and then using anyway, you know, and it was that whole thing about really using against my will, which I know that now. And physically, I become really unwell, you know, as I said like earlier, you know, I injected, I didn't know how to, you know, and I caused myself a hell of a lot of damage, and in the end, you know, I couldn't walk, I had a hole in my leg, and I used to have to crawl to get to the toilet, you know, and I had three kids in the house, you know, and I remember trying, oh, it was, anyway, just use your imagination, it was just horrible. And I remember sitting there one day thinking, what am I going to do? And I had the Sun newspaper, must have been gyro day, do you know what I mean? But I had the Sun newspaper, and there was a little ad in there, and it said, rebuild your life in 24 hours. And I thought, that's it, do you know what I mean? That's the cure, you know? And I rung them up, and they said, it's £4,000, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, I can't even get a tenner together for a bag, so I ain't going there, you know? And what happened after that was... I call it just kind of being carried. You know, I was sitting in my house, and I picked up the phone. I rang a detox that I used to be into, rang them up, and I said, I'm fucked, and I need help. And they believed me. You know, like sometimes you think they just think you're just taking the mick. They actually believed me. I said, I can't walk. I've got three kids. And I remember... And I said, but my husband's still clean. You know, I still have my pride, you know, and he's looking after the kids. You know, he's still clean. And he weren't, but... And I said, no, I want to be given a chance. And they said, you can come in, you know, and I couldn't believe it. And I walked into this detox, and I believe that that was the moment I actually surrendered. I knew that I did not want to use again, but I didn't know how not to, and I really didn't have a clue, because what I was taught in rehab was crap. You know, and it really was crap, because I can't use once. If I pick up once, it's all over. You know, the party's over for me. And I went in to detox, you know, and I remember there was this staff nurse bloke, and when I'd been in there a couple of years before, I hated him. I really hated him. You know, and this poor bloke had to pack my leg every day, you know, and by the end of my 4 weeks, I absolutely adored him. Do you know what I mean? He took so much time out for me, you know, to sit there painstakingly packing my leg. You know, I had no pride left by this point, as you can imagine. You know, just do what you like. It's always such a mess. And someone suggested that I went to an NA meeting, because fortunately for me, there was H&I meeting in this detox. And I think they do it on purpose. They put it on a Thursday night at 7:30. And we all know what's on at 7:30 on a Thursday night. And it was a real toss-up between EastEnders or the meeting. And you might think I'm joking, but it really was like that. You know, I lived, breathed, dreamt. You know, I used to watch EastEnders every day, Omnibus Sundays when I was, well, watch it, gouch out in front of it. You know, and thankfully for me, NA won, you know. And I went in this meeting, I sat there. I don't remember what they said, but I remember sitting there. I remember thinking, you ain't really used like I have, but, you know, there's something about you that kind of, you know, I might believe. The next week, another couple of people came in, and they were two former residents from the detox, and it did it for me, because the staff had told me what a nightmare they were when they came in, you know, and they said you wouldn't believe that they were the same people. And I didn't believe that they were the same people, and I thought they were in collusion with the staff. You know, let's pretend to her that we used. You say we were here, and she might believe us, you know. And that was how kind of much I didn't believe people could stop using and stay clean, you know. And it was suggested to me that I went to a meeting when I left, you know. And the plan was, is I was going to go back home, you know. And my husband was going to try and sort himself out, and then we were going to pretend we'd never relapsed, you know, and we'd all be all right. And I knew that if I went back home, I weren't going to stay clean. And I really knew that. And I made the decision not to go back. And I couldn't get funding for rehab, thank God. Not that I, you know, I've nothing against rehabs, not much. But anyway, I couldn't get funding for rehab, so I ended up in a dry house. And I went there and ended up in my first meeting. And my first meeting was Chelsea Newcomer Monday night. And people told me I'd meet people like myself, you know, from South London. And Chelsea Monday night. And I walked in there, and they were just like amazing, these people. They had suits on, and there was famous people there, and I'm sitting there, you know, and I looked like shit. And the clothes I had, you know, the shoes I had on weren't even mine. One of the staff had given me when I was in hospital. You know, and I was just an absolute wreck. You know, I had this horrible crack cough and just sweating, and it was horrible. And I was thinking, you liar. Do you know what I mean? These people haven't done what I've done, been where I've been, and I really don't belong. But for some reason, I went back the next night, and my second meeting was Clapham, Tuesday. And when I got there, someone came up to me and said, hello, Tracy. And it was one of the guys that had been in to the detox. And it blew me away. And it absolutely blew me away. Because I thought, first of all, I thought I must be really important. You know what I mean? That they'd remembered my name. But I thought, you know, these people might actually really care. You know, and I had nowhere else to go. You know, my family didn't want me. You know, my mum and all that, they didn't want to know. I didn't want to go back home because I knew I'd use. You know, so I just decided to throw myself into NA. But what I had to do was take some responsibility and realise that I'd left 3 kids behind, you know. And I went back home, and I was a couple of days, I think it was about a week clean, and I went in, and I saw my using for the first time for what it really was, you know. There was 3 kids running around like wild animals, you know. And you know, and I always say this, that I was lucky I had the drugs, they didn't, and yet they lived the life of a using addict, you know, my children, and they had no drugs. And I made a decision then. I rang social services and I asked them to take my kids. And it was the hardest thing I'd ever done, especially to do it at a few days clean. Do you know what I mean? But I now know it was the most loving thing, most selfless and loving act I have ever done for another human being, because my pride when I was using would not accept that I couldn't cope, you know. And I handed my children over. And I had to have a lot of faith that I was going to get them back. You know, I handed them over because I couldn't cope. And I remember when I'd done it, I thought, that's it, it's all over now. You know, and I remember saying to someone, they're going to be adopted, I'm going to lose them. You know, people just said to me, you know, just stay clean, keep turning up and things will happen. And I remember sitting there thinking, but you don't know what social services are like. Do you know what I mean? Once they've got them, they're never going to let them go. And what I did is I just stayed clean. And for the first time in my life, when there was a case conference, I turned up. And not only did I turned up on time and I turned up smart, you know. And social services started to see that actually maybe I was doing something different. And I remember once just trying to be really cocky, because they said to me, you know, how do we know you're going to stay clean this time? And I said, well, NA have told me it's just for today, you know, and that's all I can tell you. And I realised that that's not what they wanted to hear, you know. That was just me trying to be, you know. But what I did is I just kept turning up. And I got to about 9 months clean. I decided to move back to my house. You know, he became my ex-husband. He went off to do his own thing. And I decided to move back to my house. It had been left empty for 6 months, this house. And loads of people from NA came down with me to help me clean it out. And I can't, it's awful. The shame for any, you know, the shame of this, you know. And I really thought these people were going to really judge me, you know. And I remember saying to them, you have to excuse the mess, you know. It weren't mess, I'm telling you, it was a tit, it was awful, you know. There was a engine on the city, and I think that we were trying to fix it. Now, you know what it's like when you've had a couple of rocks and suddenly you become a mechanic or an engineer. But it was still there. There was a washing machine that had been full of water for 6 months. And they moved it and the door opened and it all shot across the floor. And these people just went, don't matter. Do you know what I mean? It don't matter. And helped me clean it up. And they made this house into a home for me. And I remember, you know, this house had been empty for 6 months. I cleaned it out and I went back to my place where I was staying, and I got burgled and I couldn't believe it, you know. There was this old telly and a stereo, and they come in and nicked it. And then a couple of weeks later they came back again and had a bowl of cereal, which really pissed me off. It were, you know, take my telly but don't eat my food. And I sat there thinking, you know, why? Why has this happened to me? I wanted to put a big notice on the door saying, I am in recovery, leave me alone. And people said to me that, you know, just because you're in recovery doesn't mean that that kind of stuff doesn't happen. And I really thought that it did. I thought I would become untouchable, you know, that I could do what I liked and there'd be, you know, and nothing would happen. And it's not true. Things do happen. I was given my daughter back. You know, my daughter came back and she was two. And it was amazing and hard, because the foster carer that she had become her mum. You know, so I was given a two-year-old girl who really didn't know. She saw me at weekends, but she didn't know what I was, you know, who I was really. And I had to rebuild a relationship with her, and I didn't know what I was doing. You know, it was kind of really taking it a day at a time. And when a couple of months later, I was given my boys back, you know, and I just didn't have a clue how to be a mum. But what I knew what I had to do was just keep turning up. And I got it wrong at first, you know, and I remember I overfed them, because I thought that's what I had to do. I never fed them when I was using, so the way forward now is to feed them loads. And in the end, they was begging me not to, you know, we can't cope, mum. You know, don't give us any more food. And I used to have this big cupboard in the kitchen just packed full of food. And it was my just-in-case cupboard. You know, it was just in case I relapsed. At least they'd eat, you know. And that was kind of what it was like in the beginning, you know. But what I did is I just stayed clean and I went to meetings, you know. I wrapped myself in the middle of NA, you know, and thankfully, you know, by doing the right stuff, you know, my life has completely changed, you know, massively. You know, I got myself a sponsor. I worked the steps. You know, I've learned that, you know, one of the big things for me, you know, in recovery is the steps, you know. And one of the reasons for that is that Narcotics Anonymous is a 12-step program, which suggests to me that I'm meant to work the steps. You know, it doesn't say it's a 12-step program if you choose to do it, you know. And that's what I've learned, you know. I wanted to change. I did not want to be the person that I was, you know, and I knew that I had to do something different, you know. And I have a great sponsor, and I managed to work through the steps and realise that, you know, I wasn't the centre of the world. You know, my step four, I realised that, you know, I wasn't a victim of circumstance. I've actually caused a lot of chaos myself. You know, I was given a golden opportunity, you know, and I believe it's an honour to work step nine, especially with my family. You know, and I have a relationship with my family today that, you know, can still be difficult at times, but it's beyond anything I could ever imagine. You know, it really is. I lost my dad when I was 18 months clean. My dad died. And that was a real kind of experience of being grown up, you know, because if I'd have been using and my dad had died, you know, it would have been my excuse to go and get out of it, you know. And for the first time, I was able to put myself to one side and think, you know, I'm going to be present for you, you know. And I was able to go to his funeral, build a relationship with my brother who hadn't spoken to me up until my dad had died, you know, and be an adult, if you like, or actually be his daughter, which was something that I was never able to do. You know, he was unable to be my father because he was an alcoholic, but I was also unable to be his daughter, you know. And for once, I was able to sort of stand there, you know. And my life today, you know, very briefly, because I don't want to go on, you know, as I said, I've got three kids. You know, my children are 13, 12 and 8, and they are a shining example of what recovery can do to other people, you know. You know, they are, well, they are amazing kids, you know. We have our moments, let me tell you. You know, my eldest is 13 and thinks he's a man, and he really does at the moment, you know, and thinks I've never, you know. He said something to me last night which really made me laugh, because we're having this bit of battle about what he can and can't do, and he says, so what was you doing when you was 13, Mum? You don't want to know, you know. And in a way, I'm very lucky, you know, that my children don't do what I do. You know, I've been able to build a career for myself, you know, and that's thanks to NA. Everything I have in my life is thanks to this program, you know, and to this fellowship. You know, my job, I work for social services today, and for the same social services that took my children, that I gave my children to. And even more bizarrely, they know that it's me as well. And I remember the day I started my job, they said, we've taken everything off the system. I said, thanks. Because I wanted to go and have a look to see what they'd all written about me, but I think it's quite good that they've actually taken it off. You know, I'm just over 7 years clean. I believe that I am just over 7 years clean because I do what's suggested. You know, I still regularly attend meetings. I have a home group. You know, my home group's Brixton Sunday Night, which has been my home group since I got clean. I do service. It's a privilege to be able to do service. You know, it really is. And I remember, for me, the willingness was, you know, I was living down in Kent and I was tea person in Brixton and I didn't have a car. And I used to get on the train every Sunday, you know, up to London, up to Brixton with 8 pints of milk, a big bag of biscuits and sugar. And that's willingness for me, you know, that I was prepared to go to any lengths to make a cup of tea, you know. But I have a fantastic life, you know, and I have the privilege today and a real privilege to be able to give away what I've been given. You know, I have sponsees who I love dearly, you know, and I really do. And I wish that, you know, I could bottle up what I had and give it to people and say, you know, this is, you know, this is it. You know, take this. But, it, you know, it's not easy. You know, for me, I had to be in a place where I was so desperate that I needed to change, you know. And thankfully, you know, I've ended up here as a result of that. you know, I'm very grateful. I'll leave it there. Thanks.